So my strong instincts are to wave into the tablet there, but that doesn't work if I go like that. But that doesn't work either, because then I can't see you wave back. I move my head really fast. So am I loud enough? I see nodding heads online. Thank you. So just when I left the house over there to come here to speak, Jonathan said one word to me, and I couldn't, it was really wonderful how he said the word, but I don't know if it was a question or a statement of reality, or he was talking about himself, or he just said, ready. Maybe he meant, are you ready? But it was just ready. I loved it. And then as I was walking over here, it's just because of, you know, my little preoccupations, I remember that there's that the mind state, that one of the mind descriptions of a mind state that we're trying to develop here, and according to the Buddha, is a mind that's ready, receptive, free of hindrances, inspired, and confident. It's very different than like, we're here to get to the fourth jhana by Thursday. Ready, receptive, free of hindrances, inspired, and confident. So when once upon a time, or in the sutta time, and as the discourses are written, there was a monk who was sick. And so someone told the Buddha, and the Buddha went to do a visit. And had to visit the sick monk. And the monk had been a serious meditator, a long-time meditator, experienced meditator. So the Buddha kind of did a guided meditation for him, or a guided evocation, or maybe he just did magic. He recited mindfulness factor of awakening, investigation factor of awakening, energy factor of awakening, joy factor of awakening, tranquility factor of awakening, samadhi factor of awakening, equanimity factor of awakening. And we don't know if he did that repeatedly, but he chanted to the sick monk. And I think the Buddha knew that the monk had experienced these, knew these really well from all his meditation practice. And the Buddha was reminding the monk, but not just the monk, but reminding the monk's body, reminding the monk's kind of inner life of these states that he was so familiar with, so that they could be evoked. They could arise in him, you know, like a contact high. You know, just, oh, wow. And the monk got well. And the way the sutta reads, it sounds like it was like quick. But you know, they put him in the direction of getting well. And then once the Buddha was sick. Imagine the Buddha sick, just like you. When you're sick, maybe fever, headache, tired. Was he even grumpy? We don't know. But he was sick. And so someone came to him and chanted the seven factors of awakening. And he revived. He got well. So here's another list of things to be developed besides ready, receptive, free of hindrances, inspired, and confident. Mindfulness and curiosity, energy, joy or delight, happiness, tranquility, calm, peaceful, settled, samadhi, unification, wholeness, settledness, calmness, concentration, if you will, and equanimity, balance. And so with this story, these stories of them chanting them when monks were sick, I did this once because I read about it in the suttas. There was a woman in IMC many years ago, 25 years ago, in the hospital, and she was a good long-time meditator. And I went to her hospital and sat next to her in her bed, and I kind of evoked the seven factors of awakening for her. And I can't say she got well, but she was happy. She was like delighted to have these. I mean, the doctors weren't giving her that. And that was so meaningful for her. Oh, maybe I'm home, or this is where, this is right, this is a good place. I know that place, this is good. So what's one of the things that's nice about the seven factors of awakening is that they are both practices we can do, but they're also states that arise. They're emergent states that are there independent of practicing them. Because we can always do them to some degree, even a beginner does them. They're kind of basic human things that you can analyze a lot of different activities that people do, and the seven factors of awakening are kind of there. I bet if you go and really talk to someone who's really cozy and delighted and involved in their knitting, you probably find the seven factors of awakening right there. You can probably analyze what they're doing, and they're there to some degree. And so they're kind of human nature that we can act on to some degree, but more importantly, for the practice, there's states that can arise. And that's why this chanting of them, for people who are familiar with them, is enough to be reminded of it, and they get evoked. But they were healing. And this idea that there are forces within us as human beings that can heal us is a phenomenal thing. That, I mean, we know that happens, right? We cut our finger, and we have the responsibility of keeping the cut clean and maybe protected. But we can't engineer the healing. The body knows what to do. And it's very complicated, but it kind of comes together and generally usually heals what's going on. We get colds and flus, and generally the body figures out what to do with the immune system and generally finds a way to get well. It's phenomenal that it does this. And sometimes we want to develop a robust immune system. We want to do what supports it. And some people say that stress challenges the immune system, so we're more susceptible to be sick. And things like meditation, tend to support the immune system, help us relax and settle, and it allows the stress kind of interferes with the natural functioning. Relaxation tends to support it often. And so we have this natural capacity for healing that we have to allow for, something that's moving through us. We have capacity for healing the heart. It's remarkable how well the heart can heal us if we trust it, if we allow it. But many people interfere with the heart's working. Many people are trying to engineer something better, or running away, or staying angry at what happened, or who wants to heal from a good resentment after all? I mean, this is a, you know, this is a good one. And so, you know, and the guy deserves it. So, you know, what do you want? Resentment or healing? Well, it's easy, right? But if you choose healing, the system knows it. So we don't reinforce it. And part of what mindfulness does is it makes room, not just helps us be relaxed, but it also makes room for all kinds of emergent qualities to appear. And one of the things that can arise, that's both something we do and something that arises for us, is the Buddhist practice. And we both have to, it's up to us to do the practice. And that's why I say sometimes to people, I kind of lean forward and say, this practice doesn't work. And for me to say that, I mean, that gets people's attention. This practice doesn't work unless you do it. So you have to do it. But at the same time, we get practiced. Something begins happening, and it feels like, wow, something's doing me now. I'm being done by this. We're not completely responsible for everything that happens to us. In fact, we have to allow for something that's not us to happen, just like we have to allow for the healing. Is the healing really you? I mean, it's not somebody else, but it's not the usual self that we feel like who controls things, who's in charge, who, you know, it's not an ethical thing, like I'm doing the healing thing wrong or right, you know. It's a natural functioning of the body that does it regardless of whether we're paying attention even sometimes. There was a time in my life when I was in the monastery, I started running as an exercise because it was pretty sedentary. And I remember, especially when I first started running, it was my body protested major. I mean, it's like my body was screaming at me, stop, you know, don't run. But I ran, and after a while I got a little bit more conditioned, and after a while I could run, and my breathing changed and came into the rhythm of running, and I became more and more conditioned, and it didn't help that the running was all uphill, because that's why we were at the bottom of a canyon. No other place to go. And then at some point, this magic happened, that I was being run. I felt, oh, like something took over. And it didn't feel like, well, I was the one doing it anymore. I mean, there was a lot of energy expended, I'm sure, but it didn't feel that way. It felt, there was kind of effortless quality to it. And I felt almost like I was being carried for a little while. But, you know, this, oh, there I am. And so practice can be that way too. If you do this Buddhist practice sincerely and engage in it, it's kind of like you're building up, you're conditioning yourself, you're getting things organized and harmonized and making things starting to work together for this purpose. And at some point, something clicks. And, you know, like you're up, you stay upright. There are times where I felt the energy rising so strongly in the body, like the chi or something. I'm not doing this, but, you know, it's not work anymore to sit upright. I'm being held upright by this flow of energy. So these emergent qualities, and this is really important to experience if you're selfish. Because you realize that there's something operating here independent of you. You can't take responsibility for it. You're just a caretaker of it. And so it can kind of show you there's something else going on here besides your efforts and what you take responsibility for, what you take the blame for, what my thing and my healing, my future, my this, my that. When I was a kid, we lived in Pennsylvania for a while, and we had this red Rambler station wagon, And we would sit in the back seat, and there was like these long, I think that's what it was, long hills. The road would go over these side of the long kind of hills and dip and then go up. But if you're going a certain speed and you go up and then you come over the crest of the hill, the car would drop a little bit. And it was so fun. Everything disappears. Like whatever I was concerned about, I lost my toy. Evan took my toy, and I'm going to go back and take it back. That was kind of cool. Like I had this, I would smile. Oh, I'd forget myself. I'd forget everything for a moment. Like it was like a cleansing. It was so wonderful. I've thought we made a mistake when we built IRC. We should have had a floor that slowly rose as we meditated. And then, and we'd all kind of like be enlightened in no time. Because we get cleared out, though. Some of people pay a lot to come here because how do you deal with your monkey mind and all your thinking? You sit on this floor, and that takes care of it. That was fun too. Wow. And then you're quiet and peaceful and happy ever after. And I offer this to you because it takes away the selfishness. And we're all selfish in some way. Or to be more polite about it, if I need to be. We're all a little bit too much self-concerned. It's a little bit too much about me, myself, and mine. It's too much like I'm responsible for my practice. I'm not doing enough. I have to do more. Why isn't that not happening to me? It should be happening faster. It never happens to me. I don't even know what it is, but it's supposed to be happening. But there's a reference point to all about me, myself, and mine. I hope no one's noticing that I don't have it yet. Or sometimes I have it. I don't know what it is, but I certainly have it. I hope everyone notices. But the thing about taking responsibility for your practice, it's kind of a headache. And blaming yourself for all your problems, and I don't know. There's a lot of self-concern. Some of it's important. Some of it's reasonable. It definitely has a place to have that. I don't want to knock it completely. But it's a little bit overrated, given how much people spend with it. So to have something to be, start tuning, being attuned to, there's something else happening here that is not your doing. Like healing is not your doing. You have to create the conditions for it. So yes, we practice mindfulness. We show up, and we show up again. And we show up again, mind wanders off, we show up again, we start to seeing clearly, recognizing what's happening here and now. We show up, we recognize. But at some point, it starts like we're quiet enough, we're engaged enough and peaceful enough that we're just aware without making any effort. Some of it you might not notice it in the meditation hall because this is where we strive. And so we're too busy to notice. But then we go out and on the deck and look out, on the trees, and you're like, wow, look, it's glistening, those trees and the colors and the flowers and the leaves and the sky. And it's like, for a little bit, like for a few moments, awareness is happening. And the awareness maybe is a little more acute or sharper or more receptive or more really here and now to take it in. And there that factor of awakening of mindfulness is operating. It's emergent. So it's good to notice that. Notice when these things emerge. Oh, there it's happening. I'm being done too. And now the practice is doing me. Now I just have to kind of stay there with it. Allow it. the curiosity. I think of the investigation factor. I associate it with clarity. So you get real, the mind gets clearer and clearer, and you see more and more distinctions. You see things stand out in a highlight. And when it starts standing out in the highlight, then we have less projected ideas on it. So that's less about what I want and don't want or what I think about it. It's just like the thing stands there by itself. In Japan, they have, at many homes, used to have these little kind of alcoves in the wall. And they sometimes would have, so it's almost like an altar-like looking place. And sometimes they'd have a flower vase with only one flower. And the flower was arranged so carefully. It like that the uniqueness, that flower was highlighted in such a special way that doesn't happen when you have a bouquet and all the flowers are mixed together. So this clarity of seeing, clarity of this step coming down, touching the floor. This is pressure. This is soft. This is hard. This is the sensations rolling from the back of the foot to the front of the foot. So there's this clarity about things that begin happening. And when there's awareness and there's clarity, certainly we have to make effort. And so this factor of awakening of energy or effort has both what we do and also has this what's being done to us. And so we have to make some effort. Like I had to run. Like I learned when we're running at the monastery that my body said no every time I started. I just knew that I had to keep doing it. And I had to put the effort in. And then after a while, it was just maybe a few hundred yards or something. And then it would kick in the harmony of running. So we have to put in our effort here in practice. But we also have to allow for the energy to arise within us. And there is energy happening here. There's activation, there's a vitality, there's aliveness that's happening. And to start feeling, how are you alive? What's the energy or vitality or feeling of things, aliveness here? And even if you're sleepy and dull and falling over, all the sensations that tell you you have those, that's happening, that's energy that's kind of speaking to you. And when you die, it won't be there. There'll be any energy to sense anything. But to start feeling that sometimes, if you know to tune into this, to start feeling the body and feeling the energy of the body, the humming of the body, the tinglings of the body. And that can also happen when the mind is thinking a lot. I mean, I had a little thinking storm the other day, sitting over there. and so what I did was, rather than go along with that train, I just brought my attention to feel the energetics. What was activated was, for me, it was like, you know, under the skull, kind of in my brain. It just felt like it was pulsing and vibrating and a little contracted and kind of, and it's just like, and then I just stayed there and felt it. Wow, there's a lot of energy. I should tap myself into the California electrical grid, because this is really something. And so what happened when I did that, it was kind of delightful to feel the energy of that. I wasn't troubled by it in the way that I was when I was involved with the thoughts. In fact, once I was with the energy of the thinking, I didn't know what I was thinking about anymore. Like that, the content kind of disappeared. It was just like feeling that. And then it kind of slowly morphed and changed very slowly. And it stopped becoming uncomfortable. And after a while, it started becoming uncomfortable to feel that humming going on. This vitality. And that brings us to the joy factor of awakening. Today I'm going to talk about the joy factor and the tranquility factor. And so the joy factor has to do with the It has a lot to do with energetics in the body, and pleasure in the body. And so to feel in the body, sometimes you can feel that the energetics, the vitality, the alive, sense of aliveness can feel pleasant. It feels nice. Often we're so distracted. They say it's been said we're so distracted by our distractions we don't even know we're distracted. But if we can stop being distracted and caught up in these thoughts and feel instead, feel the body, feel what's going on, there's more often than not, there can be very subtle, pervasive feeling of pleasure in the body, even if there's like a particular place in the body feel painful. It's a very subtle kind of humming, vibration, flowing. That, oh, look at that. In certain parts of the body, maybe. When I did the running, I would have this really good energy moving through my body. It was just a pleasure. When I went over those bumps when I was a kid, there was a rush of good feelings in my body. My mind got quiet, kind of emptied, and there was a rush of delight in my body. As we do this practice, and we start doing it continuously, so we're giving ourselves over to the practice, there's something about the continuity of doing the practice that is similar to the continuity of stroking a cat, and the cat starts to purr. If we can stay here in this practice and allowing and be present, not just present for what's happening, but present in such a way that we're making room for something to emerge. We allow something, I like to say, we allow something which is not me to emerge from within me. If we think that we're responsible, it's all up to us, then there's no room for something to happen. It's like everything's like we're all focused on doing the thing. But if we let go enough to kind of do the practice, but make room for something to happen, then something begins to happen. And an analogy for this, I feel, is the peripheral vision that we have, some of us have. And I don't know, it's kind of like at night, if you want to see in the dark, you don't look directly at something because the central vision doesn't have the same kind of night cones, night vision, as the peripheral. So you kind of look a little bit to the side. And then you can kind of see, but you can't look, you can't try too hard. I mean, trying hard to mean you look at it. What's there? You have to kind of stay kind of relaxed and looking at it to the side. And you're making room and space for the eyes to see without making it the central focus. It's fun. So practice too. This, you can have a central focus like the breathing or something you're focusing on, and simultaneously have a kind of open, wider field of allow of space for things. Make room. Trust that something's going to happen. And so, as we do the practice, as we're stroking the cat, if we stop and just keep our hand on the cat's not going to happy. And if we take our hand off the cat will stop purring. But you have to keep it, keep going. Stay here. Stay here. Stay here. Stay here and don't be so self-concerned. Stay here and put to rest for a little while. Your stories, your history, even put to rest for a while who you are. Put to rest for now so you can kind of give yourself over. And we do that in life a lot. That's why some people like to knit. Because they kind of, you know, they get involved in knitting, or they get involved in a craft, they get involved in playing music, get involved in reading a good book, and they kind of put so much aside. Things drop for the time being. So you're not abandoning yourself in some existential way. if you lose yourself in your knitting. You're not abandoning yourself in some existential way if you put aside your story, your identity, your concerns while you're doing this meditation. Give yourself over to it. And this giving over to it in a relaxed, calm way can bring contentment, can bring a sense of pleasure of being here now. There's something that begins happening, gathering together, kind of an energy field, kind of a sense of delight and joy, that it feels really, just being alive feels so good. Going over that bump in Pennsylvania and the energy rush and that dropping away, for a few moments, it's just a pleasure to be alive. Nothing is needed. It's just like everything's dropped away and things are kind of just flowing and nice for a few moments. Until we tell the dad to do it again. So to make room for something inside of you to start purring. Something inside that is a joy, a well-being, that's not dependent on winning the lottery or getting the best date or getting a promotion or whatever, you know, the worldly things, but a kind of sense of well-being that becomes not dependent on anything at all, except that our whole psychophysical system is starting to be collected and working together. We're really here for our experience. Now, here. Sometimes it's called a kind of a harmonization, a unification that happens, that we give ourselves over to the experience here. And so, again, and then feeling this in the body, and allowing the body is where the emergent begins happening. And so there can be just a feeling of delight. Wow. It took a long time, 3 days in the retreat before I felt like I had finally arrived. And finally I'm here. Like I'm not going anywhere. I'm just here in the moment. It's not dramatic. It's not like, like fireworks have gone off, meditation fireworks in some dramatic way. Wow, but I'm really here. This is cool. This is nice. There can be gladness. There can be satisfaction. There can be feeling, or feeling, this is right. Some people say, now I'm home. I didn't know I was never home. I didn't know that my mind was spinning and going off in all these trains that takes me all over the place. That actually wasn't home for myself. I was actually leaving myself behind. Some people don't want to let go of their thoughts because they think they are their thoughts. It's an existential crisis not to think. But to start dropping below the thought level, the story level, and discovering that just to be alive is wonderful sometimes. Going along with what the Buddha did when he created his monastic order, at IRC, we want you to have just enough shelter, clothing, food, medicine, drink, just enough so that you can be content to just be here for these days that you're here. There's a long list of things, a really long list of things, if you really want, we'll draw one up for you, of things to be discontented about. I mean, so if that's what your specialty is, we will provide that too. But you have to ask. But what's rare is people to take the time, the luxury, the possibility of a kind of a contentment to be here with this now. And oddly enough, even when I've had a lot of suffering that I've been sitting with, there's something very satisfying and very content-making then when I really feel like I'm just sitting with it, I'm accompanying it, I'm really here with this now, rather than going off on the stories and plans or whatever it might be. So there can be the arising of something that from one end of the range, something called joy, and one end of the range can be just kind of a very nice feeling of pleasure that somehow exists here in the body and the heart and the mind of having been just being here and being doing the practice. Some of that simple, maybe a little bit more than pleasure, it could be a satisfaction. I'm not good at this practice, but I'm so happy that I have a practice to do. This is a profound practice. And I often feel very happy that I have this. Wow, I'm so lucky. And I have to do it, but when I do it, I feel so lucky. Even if I feel like I'm not really getting much from it, I just feel so good that I can do it. Wow. So I feel happy. Just that. And then there's there's a kind of a wonderful, it's probably something hormonal or serotonin or who knows what it is. Something begins happening when we give ourselves over to just one thing, undistracted, not getting caught up in other things, and everything kind of works together for just being here. There's a kind of joy that arises, kind of a thrill that begins moving through, a feeling of someone, I think Don used the word of rapt attention, rapt interest. Sometimes it's called rapture. Sometimes it's really intense, kind of like ecstasy or something. So the awakening factor of being happy and contented, just to be here energetically, existentially, now. Because all the other things, all the thoughts, all the histories, all the logic, all the projections of the future have gotten quiet enough. And because they're not crowding out the field, the thinking mind, the stories, the history, the past hurts we have can crowd out the field so much that there's no room for this something deeper to move through us, some deeper healing, some deeper movement, some deeper awakening of our spiritual life. So that's the awakening factor of joy, and it's followed by the awakening factor of tranquility. And how I understand this works, one way that it works, is that when we have some degree of happiness, some degree of joy, in the way I've been talking about it now, joy that's not dependent on the things of the world, but just here, the very functioning of being alive here and now, something stops being afraid. Something starts feeling safe, at least for now, in this particular moment here. Something is no longer striving. Something stops wanting and wanting more and wanting different. And something stops trying to run away, shut down. And the sense of safety and the contentment with just being here, something begins to relax. Not just the muscles relaxing, they might be pretty relaxed already, but some deep inner working of our inner life, some place where maybe we've been holding for a lifetime, bracing ourselves against life, some place deeper that begins to relax, that then begins to relax the edges of the joy. It's kind of like at some point the joy in meditation is kind of like rough wood that maybe even like has little edges on it that hurt as you put your hand over it, but then it's kind of elated, and kind of sometimes it's kind of the thrill is kind of like exciting, and at first it feels really nice. It's like wow, but it, believe it or not, People who have the joy of practice, this kind of joy arising, they get tired of it. Like enough already. It's kind of tiring to have it. It's kind of energetic. And so that, but as we feel safe, as it kind of helps us to feel relaxed and helps us to not be so spinning out in our thoughts and we're here, it's kind of like it's smoothing out the joy. It begins settling the edges of it, settling the rough parts of it. And inside of that joy, there's a sweeter kind of happiness, contentment, a tranquility, a calm, a peacefulness. So the joy is a stepping stone to finding or coming into a peaceful place inside. And I think of it, it's called tranquility usually in English. I think of it as a quieting, the quieting of the body. The body now feels, gets really quiet and clear. The mind can get to be really quiet. Might still be thoughts going on, but it just feels quiet. If there's thoughts, the classic metaphor is a cloud, single cloud drifting in an endless sky. The sky is quiet. But there's one little cloud that's just slowly drifting. So there's a thought that comes, but it just happens within this wider field of a quiet mind. The heart can be quiet in a way that's very satisfying for the heart. So inner quietude, some people refer to a still place within, a place where things are quiet and still, peaceful. Some people associate tranquility with a feeling of spaciousness, just more space. The space is quiet. Sometimes I've had tranquility in meditation and it just felt like the whole room now got quiet and tranquil. And sometimes the tranquility, the sense of calm or tranquility moves with us. And even you go into a noisy place and it's like the tranquility sometimes is so strong that it's like you don't feel like you're influenced by that agitation, the noisiness of the place we're in. We carry the calm with us. And so part of this practice that we do is not just what we do, but what we recognize and what we allow. Can we recognize when these factors of awakening begin operating in us as something is beginning to flow and move? They're here already. And even if sometimes it's just a little hint of it, you know, you don't want to try too hard to look for it if it's not there. But as you move along in practice, there'll be times when, there it is. Things are clear, and now I see clearly what this is. It's almost like, now I see it so clearly, I almost want to fall in love with it. I see it so clearly that of course I want to know it more. What is this? The sense of aliveness and vitality and energy is so clear. Wow, this feels good. I better be careful how much lunch I have. I'll lose it. And sometimes there's joy, that kind of pleasure. And some people need to be reassured that it's okay to have joy in practice. It's okay to have pleasure. You're not abandoning the cause. You're not abandoning yourself. I like to think of it as the opposite. As these factors get bigger, stronger, you actually have much more to give the world, just help the world with. Joy, and then tranquility. And I can say, pretty confidently, that you're calmer today than when you arrived. You're more settled than when you arrived on Sunday. And I say that because I know from my own experience that we get habituated to how we are on retreat, and so it doesn't seem so special. But if we could just take your Sunday and snap you to today, you would like, wow. Or I won't offer to do the opposite way. But if I did, that would be like, wow. I didn't realize how much. So I'll tell you one story that happened here up in the mountains here when I did a month-long retreat by myself once up in solitary, solo retreat. I rented a cabin at a retreat center. So I did that, I drove in and unloaded my car and and then practiced. And then as I was finishing the retreat and I packed my bags and started bringing my bags to the car, I remember how I felt the first day. I felt so like this is a sacred place. I felt it's so quiet and peaceful here. It's like so special and this is good. So glad. As I was leaving the last day, it was just ordinary. It's like the place was just ordinary. It's like nothing special. And I was ordinary. Nothing. But that was a whole month and nothing happened. was this a wasted month? So then I went down to the office to finish the accounts and say goodbye. And I stood there in front of the desk. I couldn't speak. the words were far, far deep down. Where were they? And then I realized, I've been on retreat for a month, but for a little, I got so habituated to it that it was just ordinary. So trust me. Whether you might not believe what I'm saying, but part of you is calmer than when you came. There's more tranquility in you than when you came. Can you make room to feel that? Can you allow for that possibility? Can you not crowd the field with your thoughts and reactions and stories? That's the problem with thinking. There's so little room left when your energy, your mind goes into the thoughts. And what mindfulness does is creating more room so we can feel much more of actually what's happening here for us. And some of it is difficult. But if we give it room with mindfulness, the heart knows how to heal. The system knows. There's more going on here than our efforts, what we have to do, what we have to fix. Let the tears flow if that's what needs to happen. And maybe in the tears flow, you'll feel something unusual. Maybe you'll feel this feels right. There's a rightness to finally letting them flow. And that rightness is maybe the beginning of the joy factor. Something good here. Or maybe it's the beginning of being calm, making calm space for what's difficult. So as you go about the day, today and tomorrow and this retreat, it makes a difference if you give yourself over to the practice fully. But don't take too much responsibility for it. Just be wholehearted about it. Give yourself to it in whatever way that's right for you. Don't have someone else's idea what that looks like. But as you do it in such a way that you're also attuned to something that's more important than your efforts, more important than what you're trying to do, your opinions of what's supposed to happen. And that means to be ready, receptive, free from the hindrances, inspired, and confident. So should we do it for a few minutes? Taking a few moments to feel whatever quiet, calm there might be here in you or around you. The quietness just beyond the edges of your thoughts, beyond the edges of your body. Feeling whatever degree of spaciousness there might be around you as you sit. Spaciousness that might be in your mind, or the space beyond the edges of your mind. And in the quiet, in the space, may the factors of awakening show themselves, reveal themselves. The factor of awakening of awareness. The mindfulness factor awakening. The factor of awakening of investigation. The clarity factor of awakening. the factor of awakening, of effort. The effortless energy factor of awakening. Factor of awakening of joy. The contentment factor of awakening. The factor of awakening of calm, quiet. The tranquility factor of awakening. You might know yourself in many ways, but also know yourself by the seven factors of awakening. May they support you, guide you, inspire you, and help you be ready and receptive for whatever life brings you.